may impact on survival and indication is kidney cancer. Let's start with a few words about kidney cancer. It's relatively common. The older you are, the more likely you are to get it. Survival is, survival is never brilliant, but 1 year is 65% overall. But if you report at a late stage, particularly if you're metastatic, it goes down to 25% for the first year. And one of the general difficulties of developing new cancer drugs is that you have to start with the worst prognosis patients and then work forward. And there are many reasons why this drug would work better at a very early stage, very early point in the pathway. But the company wouldn't be allowed to trial the drug until it's shown something at a later stage. Now, what options do we have? This is a general slide. Killing cancer cells is fairly easy. Maintaining the integrity of the host is not. So we can either take the cells away by surgery. You can poison the cells either by radiation. Traditional chemotherapy is where the therapy is attacking all the cells, but cancer cells more than the others. Targeted chemotherapy is supposed to actually only attack the cancer. And most relevant to us are really the bottom two, because although cancer cells are your own, your body in principle should think of them as foreign. But they don't. Somehow cancers are very good at hiding themselves from the immune system. So there are two approaches here. You can either strengthen the immune system, or you can remind the immune system that the cancer cells are foreign ones. And how this applies to kidney is that the first treatment is to take the kidney out. Traditional chemotherapy does not seem to work very well. So if we've got metastases, then there's not really very many good options. The cytokines, interferon alpha and interleukin 2, are meant to boost the immune system. And there are some very specialist ones which try and stop tumor cells proliferating, or try and stop tumor cells organizing their own blood supply. And at the time this study was conducted, these three drugs were the, depending on where you were in the world, the standard of care for metastatic kidney cancer. Now, the drug that was being trialled here is called Trovax, very artificial name. It's based on a protein called 5T4. Now, this protein is found in the placenta and also on the surface of a large number of solid tumours. And by the time you get to adulthood and have a solid tumour, your body should be recognising this protein as a foreign. And there is something clearly going on here, because on the whole, over cancer various sites, if there's more of this protein on the surface of the tumour, the worse the prognosis is. So the game is, how do we get the body to recognise 5T4 as foreign? Well, the answer is that we get 5T4 into the body by another route, which somehow stimulates the immune system. So vaccinia virus, this particular one, is a sort of pox virus, and it's genetically engineered so that part of its DNA produces this protein 5T4. So this modified virus is injected into the arm, and the virus infects muscle cells. By infect, what actually happens is the virus uses the mechanisms in the cell to generate the protein to be coded inside the virus. So these muscle cells start making bits of virus, but also because we've got 5T4 DNA in the virus, it generates lots of 5T4 in the arm. This sets off alarm bells in the immune system, and the body generates antibodies to 5T4 and killer T cells, which recognize cells containing 5T4 and destroy them. And of course it does that at the site of injection, but we also hope it does it where there are metastases. So the idea is to give the immune system a shock based on 5T4. The immune system then recognizes cells expressing that as foreign and can do something with the cancer.
So the one vaccination, as it were, does two jobs. It sensitizes the immune system and it plants the 5T4 the tumor cells.
No. The 5T4 is already there. The tumor cells already have 5T4 there, but the immune system doesn't see it because
it's blind to it at that stage.
Yes.
I see. Okay.
Because the tumors can genuinely modify the local immune system. So this is actually saying, wake up, 5T4 is foreign. Any cells which express 5T4 should be zapped in some sort of way. And here's a picture of it. So it goes in the arm. These are the metastases, liver and lung. And you see, the idea is that 5T4 is that sort of pointy beige thing. And it's getting attacked in two ways, by antibodies, large proteins which lock on here, and T cells which recognize the cell and destroy it. Now the TRIST study recruited over 700 subjects with metastatic kidney cancer. It was first line therapy in the sense of first line for metastases. So we would have already had something for the original cancer in the kidney. They had to be reasonably fit. And they, in principle, got a lot of injections. The injections were every 2 weeks, up to every month, in order to keep the immune system constantly boosted. They also got what they would normally get. So when we say placebo versus Trovax, that is add-on to what the local hospital would give them, which is one of these three two-month new therapies. And that's another characteristic of new cancer drugs, is that the early trials are add-on.
Interferon and interleukin basically will also be immune stimulators, whereas sunitinib is presumably.
Nice.
Is that right?
Yeah. So these are the ones that stimulate the immune system.
Yeah.
That interferes with the blood supply, I think. But, and actually, I won't talk about this, but there was a lot of difference. It was perhaps a mistake to have three such different.
Well, it did occur to me that they were, you know, that there's an interaction.
Yeah. So, well, Trovax actually did a lot better in those two, which is possibly what you might expect, than with this one. Right. Now, things didn't go very well at all. There were regular DSMB meetings, so this is an unblinded expert external committee that met and gave advice to the company. And mine were the third or fourth meeting when all 700 subjects had been randomized. We'd seen nearly 200 deaths. But because it's quite a long treatment, 13 vaccinations end up over a year, very few had finished. And the DSMB said that there was very little chance of drug showing any benefit of the placebo. And in fact, at the moment of the DSMB meeting, it was looking like those that were on the drug were doing worse than placebo. So they strongly recommended the study was stopped, and the study was stopped. So everybody was followed up. But there was no more treatment after that point. I wonder if in retrospect, that they were a bit too cautious, but that's history. Now, the subjects were followed up, so when we got to the point of publishing, we actually waited till we got the number of events that we needed to see by the sample size calculation. So when we calculated how many patients to recruit, well, you may know that with this kind of analysis, the answer isn't you need 700 patients. The answer is you need so many events. You needed 330. So we carried on following up, even though subjects were not being treated. We carried on following up until we got the planned number of events. And at that point, there was effectively no difference between two treatments. 1.07 is a slight disadvantage to the study drug Trovax, but a p-value of 0.5 something is neither here nor there evidence-wise.
Sorry, when you say events, what do you mean?
Yes, it's a survival study.
So they're still alive after?
Well, I'd say a bit like the follow-up.
Okay, sorry.
But roughly speaking, we took about 2 years. And of course, there are difficulties in interpretation because once you stop treating them under the study, they can't just stay untreated. There's a whole lot of other kinds of therapy they must get. So that although it's Trovax versus placebo, it's also Trovax plus whatever they get next, the second line therapy versus placebo versus whatever they get next.
Sorry, what was the starting point?
Starting point was randomization.
But in terms of the biology of the disease, was it?
They already had an nephrectomy.
Yeah.
And they were going on to, well, already had an effect on me, they already had signs of metastasis by
the
scan.
Probably the signs of metastasis was sort of approximate in the starting point, was it?
Yes, so then they would,
sorry,
they would go on to say the local treatment of interferon alpha. And at that point, they were eligible to be going the study. And here are the curves, and there's not much you can put a finger between them, really. That gap's wide, and if you attach a p-value to that gap, it's quite significant. It's quite hard to interpret.
Look at the thing he's dangling, are they events?
The events are the steps. Over here, it's easy to see. Each step is an event. Those are observations which have not died at the time. Patients who have not died at the time of analysis. See?
Ah, right, so there's curve is truncated at that point.
Well, their contribution to the curve is truncated.
Yes,
at that point, yes. So somebody who was, say, that's subjects who were sent there either was randomised into the study just before the study was closed, or had been lost to follow up in some sort of waypoint early on. And of course this was very disappointing because it was a big study and provided no evidence through the planned analysis for any effect of the treatment. And the reason it was disappointing was that the small early phase studies in large indications showed really quite a strong relationship between the response to the vaccination, which you can measure in the response in various ways, and how long the patient survived. So there are two basic interpretations. Either you're completely misled by the early studies, very often the case happens, or somehow the TRIST study didn't see the efficacy in some sort of way. Of course, at the time, the more palatable conclusion is the second one, and what you see now is really a sort of exercise in seeing what could possibly have been missed in the original analysis. Let's talk about immune response. There are two, in the original picture slide, you can see the tumour cell attacked in two ways, one by antibodies, one by T cells. It's probable that being attacked by a white blood cell is the most more effective in dealing with the tumour, but it's much, much harder to measure. So immune response is basically looking at blood samples and seeing how much of the protein which attaches to 5T4 is in that blood sample. Now it's measured at baseline and at two key early points. The reason that measured at baseline is that although I said that the body doesn't generally think of 5T4 as a foreign protein, in a lot of people there is some antibody to that protein in their blood. And it's possibly a tried but failed attempt to deal with the cancer. Relative to a standard sample means there's not a quantitative way of doing it. So you take a standard sample of blood and you just say there's 10 times as much in your sample than there is in the sample, the standard sample. And it is really quite a messy distribution. If you talk to scientists about this kind of thing, they always think relatively. And the skewness and the relativeness of the code change from baseline points us to working with logs. So the response variable, our measurement of how much, how vigorously the body is responding to the vaccination, is a log of the ratio of the antibodies at 10 weeks to the rate to that at baseline. I know. There is a difficulty with talking about survival depending on immune response, because you can only measure immune response after randomization. And this slide causes a lot of trouble with the paper referees. We decided, as I said, to look at the ratio of 10 weeks to baseline, which means that the subjects had to survive until 10 weeks and have, of course, have those measurements at baseline. That quite drastically reduced the number from 700 and something to 500 and something. Now, from a pure risk intention to treat principle, this is not legal, because the difference between the groups is not purely the randomization. Basically, subjects had to survive 10 weeks, which could in itself depend on the randomization to be included. In fact, most of the excluded subjects were due to missing data, so they might have got a baseline value, missed the 10-week value, but were still on the study 6 months later, not a problem. And we convinced ourselves we weren't worried about the subjects who didn't survive 10 weeks, partly because biologically they're unlikely to benefit from vaccine therapy. There's not enough time for the immune system to get a sort of sustained boost. And also, if they don't survive 10 weeks, they must have been pretty ill to start with. They weren't supposed to be in the study unless they were expected to survive 10 weeks. Of course, it's very difficult to predict that. And the deaths were exactly equally balanced between the treatment groups. So we just decided that we would ignore the fact that we weren't being quite legal in taking just those that survived 10 weeks. Basic modelling was by proportional hazards. We were not interested in standard of care that interfere on immunogenicity. But obviously that would have an effect on survival. So we stratified, which meant having a set of baseline hazard for each standard of care. We used our immune response as an explanatory variable. And there's a slight sort of presentational difficulty here, in that it's nice to move away from p-values and actually have the real estimates. But hazard ratios, particularly when the variable is unfamiliar and continuous, they're actually quite difficult to interpret. So if we're talking about a hazard ratio with age and get a feel for this means 1 year older, what difference does it make? In terms of antibody level, not so easy. So we scaled things deliberately, and this is a happy consequence of using MOCs. The hazard ratios we present for immune response correspond to a doubling of response. So if a subject has a week 10 level 4 times that at baseline, the hazard ratio would be between that subject and one having an immune response twice that at the baseline value. So that's relatively easy to get with a handle on. Survival taken to early of 2 years and official end of follow-up. The right-hand side of the survival curve is always pretty messy. It has far too much influence. There are various reasons for that, largely to do with ascertainment.
Please, what you're saying is...
So, what we said was that we didn't want anything to do with use any information obtained 2 years after randomization by more than 2 years. And of course some subjects weren't followed 2 years, so we stopped at the official end of follow-up. The difficulty being that if you start allowing data to come in an ad hoc fashion, then you can get ascertainment bias. We were talking earlier about the Nick Winder presentation to this group about 20 years ago, which is a very elegant demonstration of ascertainment bias, a very matching circumstance.
Yeah, okay. I'd picked up an indication, which I think was quite explicit, that, say, in subjects with placebo, there is a possibility of immune reaction, antibody reaction, from their bodies. It doesn't necessarily have to be woken up by something like these injections.
Yes, it is more than possible that there could be a sort of innate immune response to the tumour.
At a certain level.
And it may well be that if this immune response was good enough, they wouldn't have got so far down the cancer route. So by definition, if they have a response, it's a failed response, because they're having metastases anyway.
Yeah, but a response, but a feeble response.
Yes, I mean, the response at baseline, which is by definition untreated, in terms of the antibody level, would not generally be as high as the response in advanced subjects who are vaccinated. Somehow you've got to account for this level at baseline, which is why you define the response as the ratio of the two levels. But of course, all this talk about response to vaccination only makes sense in the group that takes active. And what we find in the active group is that if the relative response is doubled, the hazard relative risk is about 80%. And that is p-value less than 1% unequivocal. So within that vaccinated group, there is a strong relationship between the response to the vaccination and survival. And this third point just says that we've actually captured all the relationship on baseline by taking this ratio.
Is there also a similar response in the placebo group?
No, there's nothing.
Could be really good, yeah. You could still have a relationship between the results.
There is a relationship between the level at baseline and survival.
So yeah. But not
but not the difference.
Because it
is flat.
Yeah.
Nothing's happening on that time
scale. It doesn't change.
Yeah. Right, but of course, we can't just say that its treatment's working if there's a response, because it might be, we'd like to think, that it's beneficial to better the treatment. But another explanation is that there is confounding by what is called a healthy patient effect. So here is the logic schematically. Response to treatment, the immune response, and improve survival. And this is what we'd like to see happening. And we know there's evidence of that relationship, but there could be something else completely unrelated to treatment. If the general health is good, then we might have a better immune response anyway. Cancer patients are pretty sick. They might not have a very good immune system. The subset that have a relatively good immune system will might have a good immune response. And similarly, if your general health is good, your survival might be good. So there might be no real connection here at all. And all we're seeing is a relationship between general health and the immune system, and general health and improved survival. Right, so of course, just saying that in words, association does not imply causation, as you have done in the first decades. And one way we tried to test this was that the vaccination does not just contain DNA for 5-4, because it contains the whole virus. So there's the DNA for the whole virus. And there is no association between antibodies from pox virus itself and survival. And that gave us a glimmer of hope, because if it was a general strength of the immune system, then perhaps there would be an NVA response relationship with survival. But if it's particular to 5-4, that's a bit helpful. But most of us have NVA antibodies anyway, so that's another biological difficulty. So, to demonstrate causation, we need randomization. But there's an obvious difficulty, isn't there? Because we want to show the same association is not seen in the placebo group. But we can't find out what would happen in the placebo group. Because if we vaccinate them, they're no longer placebo. So what we want is some way of knowing what the response to vaccination would have been in the placebo group. Then we can look at survival. So, instead of working with the observed immune responses, what happened at week 10 due to vaccination, we try to predict what happens at week 10 due to vaccination. Well, the advantage of that is that the predicted immune response is available for both Chovax and placebo subjects, because we can construct a predictor on the subjects which have really been vaccinated. But that predictor will be using general sort of orders of biochemistry and hematological variables, and that will can also apply to placebo subjects. So in both those groups we can construct a predictor, and we've got therefore a surrogate.
Just to get this clear, it's not that you're doing away with the observed responses, but you're using them to construct predictions.
Yes.
Yes. And then where you would have used an observed response, you replace it by the predicted response of that patient.
Yes, that would do for all of them. So we use a predicted immune response for all the subjects.
Yeah. Which may take account of various covariates.
Yes, and you see a huge list of them. Absolutely. So exactly what you just indicated. We predict immune response using a regression model that just uses baseline variables. And one of the baseline variables being standard of care. And then we can use that predictor to calculate a predicted immune response for nearly everybody in the set we're interested in. When I say nearly, there's of course some missing, unavoidable missing data, blood samples lost, that sort of thing at baseline. So this is the predicted response in the Trovax group in the absence of Trovax. It's a predicted response. In the Trovax group is the predicted response obtained by doing modeling. Yeah. Response. But with that linear predictor, we can then go to the placebo group and work out the predicted response in the placebo group.
Using their characteristics in the same way as you would.
Yes. Exactly, because you'll see that this predicted response is turns out to be really quite a simple linear predictor, which can be calculated for both. Right, so all models contain the standard of care interferon interleukins, isn't it? Because it has an effect. It's not very interesting, but essentially we're giving a separate intercept for each of these standard of cares. We're not interested, we have to adjust for it. We found a large number, a large number of baseline characteristics which could possibly affect immune response. So essentially I looked at them all, threw out the ones which weren't doing anything at all, p-value of bigger than 0.2. That gave me a large multivariate model, and then I just chucked out those that weren't significant at 5%. So I end up with quite a small multivariate model. So this is the list. Some of these terms will be familiar to you, some not, but this is the original list. Now if you do univariate modeling, and these blue things are positive relationship with immune response. So more hemoglobin, your blood, better your body responds to vaccination. And this lot are negative associations. If you ask a scientist for justification for any of these, they will come up with one, but you know jolly well that if it had been the other way around, they would have come up with a equally plausible one. Now I've removed those which didn't make it to the multivariate model. So these are all went into the multivariate model, and quite a curious thing happened in that hematocrit changed size. So hematocrit by itself was a positive predictor. We fixed hemoglobin, hematocrit was negative. And that's important because when we did the backwards elimination, we were only left with those three. So make a point for emphasis. So these are the three variables that are really doing something to predict immune response. Now, I feel, I felt then, I feel less somehow, I'm on quite shaky territory here, because if you start off with probably 30 or so variables, all this stuff is very highly correlated with each other. So ending up with three particular ones is not a very robust process. So the final model predicting immune response, stratified by standard of care, and that's just the summary. P values are pretty strong, and it's pretty, I think it's quite interesting that the strongest predictor is the baseline antibody level, and that it's negative, so the more you have a baseline, the less you go up when you are vaccinated. So this is a predictor which I'm going to start calling a surrogate. So the predictor for any individual is calculated like this. Separate term for each standard of care plus this linear sum of three baseline variables. And emphasize, I can do it for three, for active and placebo. So this predictor can be constructed for both. term of standard of care is context dependent. If you were going to a different study or for a different site of cancer, you would expect that term to vary. It's not important. But these other three are patient specific. So we call that the immune response surrogate. This little predictor we take as a response, as a surrogate for immune response, and then we can calculate it for every patient.
Peter, were there no interactions between the standard of care and the three variables you came up with? Was that a uniform relationship?
Well, yes, I mean, there were interactions all over the place. It would... The basic sort of reasoning is that this is a post hoc analysis and involving what could be described as sort of data dredging, looking for anything. So the only way to get credibility ultimately is to transfer these ideas to different contexts. So if we were wanted to say take this to another kidney cancer study or a study in a different indication, I'll talk briefly about prostate a bit later on, anything with standard of care is not transferable. So there would have been interactions between standard of care and these events. But there would be no use to us because we couldn't take those interactions to a different study or a different cancer site. So it proceeded really on the proof of the pudding business. This is essentially some sort of language in some sort of practical meaning, particularly meaningful way. But if this has no relationship with survival, or doesn't transfer to different studies or different contexts, then it's useless. If it does have a relationship with survival, does transfer to different contexts, then it doesn't matter where it came from, it works. This is very pragmatic. Right, so we have a surrogate for immune response, I call it surrogate from now on, which is available for both SIBO and CHOVAC subjects. So now, instead of working with the actual response relating to survival, we can work with the surrogate. Now, if the relationship between the surrogate and survival is different in the two groups, i.e. a treatment by surrogate interaction, that means the treatment is doing something biologically. Because if the treatment was useless just as a placebo, acting like a placebo, there would be no interaction. The fact there is an interaction means that biologically something's going on, even though it may not be what we expected or what we like. So now we go back to modelling survival. Now we included all subjects with enough data. And essentially we looked at the effect of surrogate in the placebo group and either reparameterized or either set up parameters by looking at CHOVAC separately or equivalently at a term for the interaction. And we'll just see how that works in the next slide. So we could have had placebo and CHOVAC separately, and that would be the first two lines.
or we could have had the SIBO and the interaction term, that would be the first line. Third line. And then, well, they're just reparameterizations of the same parameter space. And what we do see is that there is some, but not much, effect on the surrogate and survival in the SIBO group. There's really quite a large effect in the Chovax group. So, nothing in predicted response leads to a quartering of the relative risk. And the interaction term, Q1, is insignificant at really quite a small p-value. So now there's no doubt by ordinary standards of p-values that Provax is doing something, because the difference between what it does in the placebo, the difference between the effect of the surrogate for the immune response in the placebo group, starts that sentence without quite getting the structure right. These two lines are different. They can only be different if there's an effect, biological effect on Trovax. Because if this Trovax didn't have any effect, then the two lines would be the same, indistinguishable. And that p-value being so low is a measure of how much evidence you've got that Trovax is doing something.
And what now is the interaction between?
Well, the interaction is that either you can parameterize placebo Trovax, or you can parameterize.
Okay, so it depends
Trovax
on which group you pick the relationship to.
Yeah, exactly. So if you multiply 0.7 by 0.36, you get 0.25. Right now, up here, we have the surrogate for the immune response. Here we have the immune response itself on the same scales. And the crucial thing here is that immune response is quite a good predictor of survival in the Trovax group. But the surrogate for the immune response is even better predictor of survival. Now normally we think of surrogates as being a poor substitute for the real thing. But here, the surrogate for the immune response is actually doing better than the variable is a surrogate for. Right, so let's go back to the logic. This is where we started from. Now we introduce the surrogate. And the surrogate was used to generate the immune response. And we also now know that it's related to improved survival in the Trovax arm. So in a way, the surrogate is taking over the role of general health. But we can measure it. That's just Trovax. Now, in the placebo arm, we have the same pattern. Except there's no immune response, of course, it's just the predictor of it. And there are the p-values for each pathway. And that's the p-value, say these pathways are different. Drug is having, the vaccination is having an effect. Now, I think it's very interesting that the surrogate does better than the original variable. I've got a
diagram in page 7 about that. So that was our first main discovery. I've emphasised this a lot. If the surrogate predicts treatment benefit, that is a really direct demonstration of biological activity. And finally, in practical terms, if we know that some patients are more likely to benefit from treatment than others, then you can enrich future studies or clinical practice. So I'll go through this quickly one by one. Here is a diagram of what's happening with Trembax. Why is that p-value so low compared to that one? Well, the answer is, I'm going to replace immune response here by observed response, because that's what we're actually measuring. And what we measure in terms of actually doing the biochemistry is very, very noisy. So what I postulate is that there is a sort of state of nature under the observed response called the action response. So the IRS affects what your body is actually doing. Because obviously just having higher hemoglobin in the chat next to you is not going to directly affect your survival. So there's a latent actual response here.
I was going to ask whether you had a plot of observed response against IRS, but I think it's very much to do with what you're now saying.
Yes, I don't have one with me, but actually it's very unimpressive.
Yeah, it would show the noise.
Yes, exactly. Perhaps I should have it, but it does show a lot of noise. So the p-value from the surrogate to improve survival is so good because we're going through the actual latent hidden response. The p-value from the observed response to improve survival is bad because there's so much noise. Yeah. And again, I'm reminded of a talk about 20 years ago from Nick Day to the school, talking about how in breast cancer screening, the surrogate is often much better variable to use than the actual. Right, well, basically, this just repeats what I've been saying. You've got evidence of biological activity. And reasonably strong evidence. I could have done this without doing the intermediate step of predicting the immune response. So I could have taken all my variables and seen which was the best one to tease out the activity. But that, there would be great multiplicity issues here. So I get a lot of credibility, I think, by generating a predictor of immune response and then finding, hey, it's a predictor of treatment benefit, rather than going straight to treatment benefit. Right. A brief statement of how we gain things when we get enrichment. I mean, we can take a patient at screening and decide whether that patient can become a subject in the next trial or even in future treatment. The surrogate is quite difficult to calculate on the fly. You actually have to use a computer or calculator. But in practice, you can use much simpler forms of enrichment. You can say that the baseline antibody level has to be below a threshold. And the baseline, this is mean cell hemoglobin concentration has to be above a threshold. The reason that's chosen, remember, hemoglobin and hematocrit on the direction. And so we looked at the data again, successively looking at the nicest groups of patients. So we took the bottom X percent for antibody level, top X percent for baseline in the cell hemoglobin concentration, and tried to find a sweet spot with a really good p-value. As you enrich the population, the treatment effect gets larger and larger, but sample size gets smaller and smaller. So this is, I mean, in a sense, it's basically cheating, but it gives us a nice feeling about what might have happened. So essentially, with 700 or so subjects, we've got a p-value of 0.55 something, nothing. If we choose the best 200 in terms of their baseline characteristics, we get a much better p-value. So although this is very retrospective and lacks some credibility on that basis, it is nevertheless a sign that there's something going on. So this is a health warning based on the retrospective exploratory analysis. Starting with a large number of baseline characteristics, all this made it quite difficult to get the papers published on this, but they all are published. What helped us a great deal was that if we took the surrogate into different small studies, what we saw was pretty consistent. So immune response and survival was predicted in different indications, colon and prostate, and within a small early phase kidney study, the parameters were pretty much the same. So that was good. Ongoing and future trials, of course, the real proof of the pudding is whether this works in the future rather than in the past. Really quite hot off the press is that for the prostate cancer study, just finished, only 50 subjects. The surrogate is a good predictor in that study as well.
This is metastatic prostate cancer again.
So that is a completely different kind of cancer. Very small study, very different additional treatments. The surrogate still predicts survival. It was very encouraging. And also going on more as in parallel, there was some attempts, not very successful to be honest, at trying to get at the science. People speculate that because hemoglobin is so deeply involved in the surrogate, there's something to do with iron metabolism, but trying to measure iron metabolism and the relationship to the immune system is difficult, and you haven't really got anything out of that. It would be nice if you could measure something which just tells you how healthy your immune system is, but that doesn't appear to be there.
Well, it's certainly strongly associated with inflammatory response, so I guess
yes,
it's quite likely to be associated with the immune response.
Exactly, and CRP is a huge prediction of survival, but it doesn't connect with treatment prescribed. So if you just wanted to predict survival, you could use C-reactive protein.
Predictors. So, but it's incredibly noisy, I guess.
Yes. So there are interactions between the acute environment that these people haven't really got a handle on. But so that's more or less it. The acknowledgement that people involved were actually very good at letting you do what they like, do obfuscate themselves and things like that. They weren't sort of cost-driven, they were very much science-driven. And we had a lot of talk trying to understand each other, which was very, very enjoyable. And a couple of references were to be published at the end, and issues to some of the things where I didn't, which were issues in the actual analysis, but I didn't mention so much during the talk. Okay, that's it. That's quite a quite a long study of this. There you are.
Thank you.
Studies, you said it was Trovax or placebo given to the selected patients.
Yes.
The selected patients were worldwide and already receiving three existing treatments?
One of three.
One of three, yeah,
so,
one of three.
So, they would be going on to their first post-metastatic treatment, of which there would be quite a few different ones, but the three most common ones were
those three. So my question is then, and pardon my ignorance, but is there not some kind of chemical interaction potential between Trovax and the chemical interaction which is different dependent on which of the three existing drugs are there, or are they completely independent? And
not independent, and also it will be very difficult to predict whether there will be an interaction before. But certainly, because interferon and interleukin both boost the immune system, and Trovax is also trying to sort of make the immune system recognize something, that is a different, completely different reaction, isn't it? Which is trying to stop the tumor growing its own blood vessels.
Yeah.
So you'd expect perhaps more interaction.
So would there be some kind of time connection for the patients who'd have been on the existing, one of the existing three treatments, and the efficacy of the if you like, the immune boosting of that treatment? Is that not a potential, another potential covariant that limit the time on a previous treatment?
Or did they start going at the same time? Well, they were supposed to be naive to the standard of care.
Right.
So they would have had their kidney removed, and there would be evidence that disease is spreading.
Right.
Then, so in ordinary life, they would get, say, interferon.
Okay.
And at that point, if the hospital was recruited to the study, they would also ask them if they minded being randomized into this study. But it's not a very satisfactory situation, because over the years these studies run, the standard of care changes, because interferon and interleukin, relatively speaking, quite old treatments. Sunitinib was very, very sort of new and attractive. And richer countries would get sunitinib first. So there is some difficulty with the standard of care varying as the study progresses. And the prostate study, which I described as being very small, is very small because that was, again, a standard of care study. Standard of care became unfashionable and nobody was wanting to use it. So it had to be abandoned.
And if I may, just one other thing. You said this was phase three clinical studies. And there was some earlier work done where Trovax seemed very promising.
Yes.
But those early studies, I guess, were done in the absence of one of the other three drugs that were available at the same time.
Not necessarily.
Ah.
They were done in a variety of indications, a variety of standard of care. or even if it was done later, that, if you run out of non-therapies, then there's nothing left for that patient, then they could, may as well.
Right, so this.
What you didn't mention, perhaps, was that this is the first placebo-controlled study. All the other ones provided no evidence against placebo, because placebo wasn't used in the early phases.
Right. Okay.
And it's quite unusual and dangerous to go straight from studies without placebo to a large study with placebo.
Okay.
Just a matter of interest, how was immune response measured?
It's generally speaking by a chain of molecules in the world. And I give me an opportunity to use this, doesn't it? In the blood, you have a very large molecule. Yes, so the immune system is generating all this stuff, and that's sort of in a mass of ages. So this bit here is exactly the right shape to latch onto an FT4, and not anything else.
So in fact, you're trying to measure the proportion of the blood in one molecules which have that precise
yes.
Match.
So what they do, and this is a simplification, I don't understand it completely, is that they construct another large molecule with the FT4 on it, and everything gets squished around in a test tube.
They go fishing.
They go fishing, exactly. And they form to each other, and somehow this end gets attached to a piece of plastic in some sort of way. I apologize if anyone in this audience actually knows, it's very simplified. And the ones which aren't attached get washed away. So that tells you that the attachment changes the conformation. And also, there's some way of detecting this. So it could be colour or radioactivity. So these are done in small samples of blood in wells of the plate. 50 wells with the same sample of blood, you get 50 very different reasons because of this. The washing away, of course, is again not going to be complete and reproducible process. And added to that will be random variation in dust in terms of your body. Even if you have a perfect measurement system, 2 o'clock in the morning is not the same as 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
A slight deviation from what you've been telling us. We had a talk about 18 months ago from Tim Eisen about renal cancer.
Uh-huh.
And he said, They don't need to take the whole kidney anymore, but in your data, those patients have all lost the whole kidney?
Not necessarily.
Right.
Generally,
depends on the centre, probably, doesn't it?
Yes, and what happens in these trials are very widespread geographically. So if you're in Eastern Europe or India, you wouldn't necessarily be doing what's done in the United States or here.
Well, you certainly, particularly in that tumour type, in clear cell tumours, they will very definitely do partial nephrectomies quite frequently. Because tumours with very small clear cell, sorry, kidneys with very small clear cell tumours are actually now eligible for using for transplantation.
Thank you.
For these, we're probably, well, I can tell you, for metastatic, they were probably relatively advanced ones.
Probably misunderstood something. So, in essence, you're saying that what you did, you stratified according to the patient's immune system somehow, or initial state of the immune system.
Yeah, that's why I try to use it as a continuous predictor.
what I don't understand is you're still technically saying that the randomization didn't part the population equally according to the initial immune system. It didn't part them equally, even though it was randomized. You say people with better immune response were in the group?
No, there was a little bit of that, and if you adjusted for it, there was some movement. But no, essentially that where you're getting to is that if I show that in a certain group of patients with a good immune system, the drug works, the vaccination works, given that there was no overall effect, there must be a corresponding group of patients where the drug was detrimental. Because you saw the survival curve right at the beginning. Well, there's nothing there. So if there's a subgroup where much better survival under Chovax, then there must be a subgroup with a much worse survival. And that is not in common in cancer, is it? Because you've got to be fit for chemotherapy. If you give unfit people chemotherapy, if you worsen the prospects. And here we say you've got to be fit for immunotherapy.
That's
remarkably
smooth.
Yeah, well, it's, you can ignore on the moment as well. It's almost a perfect exponential thing, isn't it?
So what you're saying is that the drug has also a negative effect on people with compromised immune system?
Well, it must do. If there's no effect overall, and there's a subgroup which we've obtained in a reasonably credible fashion where there is an effect or a positive effect. To balance it out, there must be a subgroup with a negative effect.
And that makes sense also biologically, it's automatically. Is it very
If your immune system is only just coping, then you might argue that giving it a bad shock sort of sends it towards an argument.
I mean, in medical practice, you've got to be very careful about immunizing, giving vaccines to people with compromised immune systems.
I'm sure you have, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Aren't you rich, basically? That's a person with a compromised immune system.
That's it. So it is. I mean, there is a biological logic to it as well. But, I mean, while we are relatively experienced in telling whether people are fit for surgery or chemotherapy, we're not really fit yet. In this sort of context, to tell people fit for immunotherapy.
Thank you very much, Peter.
And for those who don't know